I know, I'm stronger, faster, better, right? But you left out one thing. I'm not a man anymore. I'm a freak.
The Freak Network at thefreaknetwork.com.
On today's Bill of the Flatter Show, episode 152, Red Hot Spoons, Extinction, Amelia Earhart, and Dixie. All of this and more. The Flatter Show, starring Kenty and Jose. Welcome to the Flatter Show. A low-calorie carbonated beverage for my diet. That's right, kids. Welcome to the Flatter Show. Another episode of the Flatter Show. As we near the end of summer, I wanted to get to the beach this weekend. I did not get to the beach. I was going to do a bunch of wash this weekend. I did not do the wash. Jose is shopping at Bloomingdale's. Last spotted, he was heading up the escalator to the restaurant on the fourth floor. No doubt hungry from all his shopping. So welcome, kids. Welcome to another Flatter Show. It's beautiful outside. I really need to get out to the beach next week because it's getting to be the end of summer. And I just need to get to the beach. Maybe I'll do it tonight. Maybe I'll go around 6 o'clock. I'll walk on the beach. And we'll see, right? Right. And I have to do wash, too. I have to do a bunch of wash. And need to get some stuff cleaned up and, you know, whatever. But I did do some stuff. It's not like I was a total sponge the whole weekend. Saturday, most of the day was taken up, like the middle part of the day was taken up with cleaning the house with antifungal cleaner. And the house is, you know, I'm on the top unit and the woman is downstairs and she's in the bottom unit. She's downstairs and that in the bottom. And it's a colonial house and we had it painted, but there seems to be mildew on it. So we bought some stuff and sprayed it on and it worked really fine. So that's what we did for part of the house, and she did some today. So next weekend I'll probably have to do some too, but I want to do it early so I can get to the beach. I hope it's nice and dry. Hopefully it will be nice and dry and hot, because that's what you need. You need that when you're cleaning the house. Let's see what else I did. I also found a new gym in the area, which is actually not a new gym. It's been there. It's called Fitness Zone. I'm going to leave the YMCA and go to the Fitness Zone for several reasons. One of which is the men's room in the men's changing room is supposed to be for men and anyone over the age of 18. It's for the people using the fitness room in the gym and whatever. You know, there's showers and for the men. Well, there's a door that goes over to the gymnasium where they have the basketball games. And I swear to God, every night that I'm at the gym, there are kids running through the fitness room, running through the changing room. The other night, I got fed up with it. I was, you know, took my shower and I came out and I was like, you know, naked, you know. And there's these two kids in the changing room. And they're, oh, we're just weighing ourselves. I'm like, get out of here. You're not supposed to be in here. Why? Why? I'm like, you know, they have a guy who is supposed to monitor, and he was missing. I'm really just fed up with it, you know. And it also, I mean, you know, I like the Y. I like supporting the Y. I like the idea of the Y. And even though they have limited, you know, workout equipment, I'm okay with it. So, but I'm just tired of, unprofessionality. The unprofessionality, is that word? I'm making up words now. The unprofessional nature of the Y. I'm tired of it. Whatever. The only thing they have that I really will miss is the sauna, which I can deal without. I can do without. and the pool, but whatever. Whatever, right? Maybe I can go there and pay a day, go there for the day and do whatever. So, yeah, that's that. So I'm going to this new gym, and it's big. They have an ass load of machines, all these different types of machines. They have a great free weight area. They have a squat rack, a power rack, you know, good stuff, you know, and I'm really looking forward to it. I think it'll be my next step up in my bodybuilding endeavors. I do want to start going 4 days a week, doing a 4 day split routine. But I'm still trying to determine what kind of program I'm going to do, what exercises and stuff, because everything I've looked at doesn't really look like something I want to do, but you know, we'll see. Maybe I'll have to stick with the three days a week program, but do it differently. So that's that. That's new. So pretty soon I'll be going to Fitness Zone instead of the YMCA. Let's see. Anything else new this week? Well, at work, I don't talk about work, but I can talk about this in a general sense. As you know, I'm very busy with this new, with training with this new program. Uses SQL programming language. And Richard from Annapolis, he sent me a nice link, how to use SQL, which I have looked at, and that has helped me a little bit in familiarity with the language. But I have to start translating we have to start building our reports based on the SQL language, which is a little bit more difficult because I have to think about how to do it, you know. So that's what we're doing now. And, you know, that's what I'm doing. Trying to get these formulas ready so the financials come out correctly. We have to test them and everything. So there's two more training sessions before we're officially, you know, trained in this program, which is called MPC, by the way, by IPS Sendero. It's apparently not many, I might have to go back and edit that. Not many organizations use it. That's that. Hello.
Hi, Kenty. This is Joe G. from Board Beyond Belief. I just finished listening to Flatus Show number 151. I'm just thinking, you're up to 151 episodes. This is incredible. Anyway, this was a stellar performance all the way through. I'm so glad that you were able to participate, if only for a few minutes, in the new Media Expo in Las Vegas by serendipitously dialing me instead of John. So it was great that we were all able to speak with you. And I agree with you about Zilafek's voice. Doesn't he have a wonderful voice? I really like listening to him, too. I mentioned to him that he should listen to this podcast because you mentioned him a number of times. My last comment, I must say, is about the song. Now, this should get you some attention. This... I'm assuming you wrote it, yes? Or is this a song that one of those like postmodern songs or minimalist songs that you decided to do with your own vocals and with your ukulele? But anyway, I assume that you had written it. It was wonderful. I loved it. It was a complete surprise. I didn't expect that at all. So I really enjoyed that a great deal. And if you could expound a bit about that piece, about your writing it or where you got it, whatever, that would be much appreciated. Also, your rendition of that particular hymn was a little bit different than what I remember. I don't quite remember success being success, being, you know, interpreted in that fashion, but it was well appreciated. Okay, I babble on too much. Thank you so much for a lovely Flatus show, and I'm sure we'll talk soon. Bye-bye.
Hi, Kenty. I've been listening to some of your old episodes, and I have a correction. Mormons don't believe that Jesus will return, like, you know, specifically to Missouri. I still think he's going to touch down on the Mount of Olives. I always like saying that. Sounds like, you know, he's like a rocket or something, some sort of wild, crazy spaceship. But they do believe that he will rule the world in the millennial period from Missouri. And that Missouri also has the place where the Garden of Eden used to be. They call Adam on Dionysus. Anyway, okay. Bye.
Bye. Talk to you later. Okay, Joe G., we'll start with you first. The song I did at the end was my own song. I wouldn't say I wrote it because, it, you know, there was no forethought, really. I just started doing this melismata sort of thing, and then I sort of layered it with other stuff, and then added ukulele and mashed it up a little bit to make it seem like it had form, and presented it. Basically, I was just in the mood. I was thinking of all those wild singers from the 70s singing modern music, like, you know, Berio and Boulez and some other people, which I can't think of their names, but they're there. They really are there. Really crazy, crazy, crazy music. So that was that. That's really basically all it was. And I also got a comment from Zillafag that he thought it was on acid, the song, ukulele song on acid. So I thought that was really funny. It is true. But I wasn't on acid when I did it. It was just for fun. The second phone call is from Calvin, and he is correcting me. Apparently, Jesus will not return to Missouri, but he is going to return on the Mount of Olives. He's going to land like he's in a UFO, but he'll rule from Missouri. I wonder if it'll be Branson, Missouri, but he's going to rule from Missouri. He also says that the Garden of Eden is set in Missouri, or was. Now, on Wikipedia, Calvin, that entry says that the Mormons believe the Garden of Eden is in South Carolina. So, who is right? You, a real Mormon, or Wikipedia? We don't know who wrote that, so I'll trust you that the Garden of Eden is in Missouri. But let me know if you know of anything about the idea that the Garden of Eden was actually in South Carolina. And I'd be interested in that. Because, you know, in the Flata Show, we don't want to give disinformation. We want to only have valid information. Of course, Wikipedia is of, you know, is the highest standards. And because of that, I always say, take it with a grain of salt, the information you find on the Flata Show. Measure it and yourself to make sure that it stands against all biblical truth. I mean, not biblical truth, against the truth of rationality. And, you know, and that's that. So I think I'll let you go. And I will say, on with the show.
Oh, little Audrey sails, save for rainy days. She sails, but every time it rains, she spends what she puts away. She knows her proverbs, A to Z, and knows the good they bring.
But when she has to follow them,
well, that's another thing. Oh, little Audrey sails, while the sun is out, make hay.
One day, little Audrey was walking down the street with her uncle, and he was taking her to his favorite S&M club. Well, he pulled off his clothes and got into a sling, and an enormous, muscular man came up and said,
"I'm gonna fuck you with my big, long dick."
Little Audrey's uncle said, oh no, don't do that, don't do that." But he was clamped down. So the man with the giant penis undid his trousers and started greasing up his penis with Crisco. And just as he was about to fuck little Audrey's uncle, and little Audrey's uncle was begging him not to fuck him because it would hurt so much, little Audrey just laughed and laughed and laughed because she knew that he was using shortening.
Splash!
That's Brenda Starr you hear, finishing up her scoop just for you. Brenda Starr.
Hi, kids. This is Kenty, giving you the Brenda Starr update for the week. Well, as you know, Brenda is telling Sage and Trad about previous encounters with Basil St. John, the first of which resulted in a marriage and her having a daughter, Star Twinkle St. John. And one time seeing Basil St. John on her friend Wanda Fonda's talk show, which is a TV talk show. When Basil St. John took the stage, he took over. And the question was about love. So Basil was asking audience members about what love is. And one person said, well, love is when you receive flowers from your husband. And he goes, well, so receiving things is what love is about, not giving. And another person said, a man said, you know, I think it's about being able to do your own thing. And he said, well, so love is about liberty and not obligation. And then one guy said, well, love is a myth. It's a concocted myth from the television and greeting cards, and that really people are just glued by need. And then finally, love is something that makes you more self-conscious. These are all things about love. So he's asking the audience. I kind of like the idea that love is a myth concocted by card companies, Hallmark, that people really are glued by need than more than anything else. The reason why we seek each other is because we really do need each other. We are social animals. I think, was it Aristotle or Plato said we are political animals? Well, it's true. So then he asked Brenda, and she said, the measure of love is always in loss. It's only in losing someone that you fully feel the love that bound you together. I added together. And Wanda, he asked Wanda, so how many times can a person fall in love in a lifetime? 2, 5, 20? And Wanda looks up at Basil St. John. She says, 1. So, you know, Brenda's recalling this to her captive audience, Sage and Trad. Trad has to go to bed, but Sage says, please tell me one more story. So Brenda says, well, the last time I saw Basil, he was living in a treehouse. So that indicates to me that maybe he didn't find his black orchid serum. What do you think?
Real American History.
The Fountain of Youth. There lived in the days of Columbus an old Spanish nobleman by the name of Ponce de Leon. He had fought long and hard for his king. He had sailed with Columbus on his second voyage across the Sea of Darkness. As a favor, the Spanish king had made him governor of Puerto Rico. The old Spanish knight set sail for this island with 8 vessels and several hundred soldiers. He laid out the city now called San Juan. He built a fine house for himself and called it the White Castle. Although Ponce de Leon was now a rich man, he was still greedy. He had been told that the island was rich in gold and precious stones, but there was nothing of either to be found. So the poor old fellow vented his spite on the kind and gentle natives. He had hundreds of them killed, and many others he hunted in the woods like wild beasts. He robbed the Indians of what they had and enslaved as many as he could. Then he was not allowed to be governor any longer. He was unhappy and wanted to go in search of a new country. For many years, a strange story had been going around among the natives of the New World. It was a tale about a lovely island far away to the north. On this island, there was said to be a spring of healing water, the most wonderful in all the world. Bimini was the queer name the natives gave this island, of which they were never tired of talking. One day, when the old Spaniard sat in his white castle looking out on the sea, he overheard some of his slaves speaking of this magic spot. "I tell you," said one, "nobody ever grows old in Bimini." Why not? Because there is the Fountain of Youth. If you drink of its waters, you never can grow old. You will always keep young. The old governor pricked up his ears. A drink from such a fountain was just what he needed. He was old, feeble, and unhappy. Oh, that he might never die. If he could only become young again, what brave deeds he would do. How hard he would fight again for his king. What glory and gold he would win for himself in this new world. He sent for the slave. You were speaking of Bimini. What of Bimini? Where is Bimini? He asked. An island, master, far away to the north. It is more than 5 days' sail. Come, tell me all about it. Have you ever been there? No, master, it is too far away for us to go in our canoes, but we have heard about it all of our lives. The poor slave then told what he had heard about the magical fountain. The old governor called other slaves and asked them. They all told the same story. The island lay far to the north. It was a land of lovely flowers with this most wonderful spring of clear water. The good ships of the white men could sail there in a few days. Ponce de Leon decided to go in search of the magical fountain of youth. He fitted out 3 vessels and sailed away toward the northwest. When the little fleet sailed past the tiny island where Columbus had first landed, the old governor shouted to the natives along the shore, "Bimini! Where is Bimini?" The Indians pointed to the northwest. Nobody had ever seen the island, but all had heard of it. One lovely morning, Ponce de Leon came in sight of a strange coast. The day was Easter Sunday, which in Spain is known as the Feast of Flowers. The land was covered with beautiful flowers. The natives were gentle and friendly. "Is this Bimini?" cried the governor. "Is this the land of the magic spring?" Nobody could understand. At all events, because it was Easter, and there was an abundance of flowers, Ponce de Leon called the land Florida. Up and down the coast, the old Spaniard sailed in search of the Fountain of Youth. Many and many springs of clear, cool water were found in this land of flowers. As the story goes, he drank from all, but his youth never came back. He bathed in many gentle rivers, but he kept growing older. At last, he gave up the search and sailed back to Puerto Rico. 10 years went by. Once more, Ponce de Leon sailed in search of the magical fountain. This time, he was cruel to the natives. They, in turn, killed many of the Spaniards and drove the others back to their ships. The old governor was mortally wounded by an arrow. "Carry me back to Cuba," he said to his men. "I shall never find the wonderful Fountain of Youth." Back to Cuba he was carried. After many days suffering from his wound, the poor old man died. He died wishing that he might have found his lost youth.
To the sea.
You'll find that love is like this. Each precious moment we miss will never, ever return again. So don't let us throw one sweet moment away. Time waits for no one. Let's take love while we may. Extinct. Well, in 1937, that was the year that the last Bally Tiger was formally alive, according to reports. And the Bally Tiger was the first tiger subspecies to become extinct. And I don't know if you know this or not, but all tiger species today, existing tiger species, are very vulnerable and are likely to follow suit over the next, 50 years or 100 years or whatever time. Now, the Bally Tiger has an interesting little story. And I'm going to read it from a website here, this guy, Peter Maas, and he's from the Netherlands. And he has a page about extinct animals, which I have links for on my website, on a blog, theflatishow.blogspot.com. It reads, because Bali is a small island, Bali High is calling. That's the tiger. Anyway, Bali is a small island. The tiger population on Bali must always have been quite low. Rapid increase in the human population and a rising demand for agricultural land led to deforestation. This has led to the destruction and fragmentation of the already small tiger habitat. At the beginning of the 20th century, tigers probably survived only in the mountainous and relatively sparsely populated western part of the island. Here, hunting pressure increased as the country was gradually opened up and many Europeans living in Java organized hunting trips to Bali. As early as the mid-1930s, most Bali tigers were museum or trophy specimens. Both trophy hunters and locals carried new and more efficient firearms. Between the two world wars, the Bali tiger was hunted indiscriminately, and by the end of World War II, the Balinese subspecies is thought to have disappeared altogether. The last Bali tigers lived in the northwestern tip of the island. The last well-documented specimen was killed there at Sunbar Kima, West Bali, on the 20th or 27th of September 1937. This was an adult tigress. An exact date of extinction is unknown, as throughout the 1940s, reports persisted that tigers still lived on the island. These came from people considered to be reliable, and they continued into the 1950s, though with reducing frequency. One instance occurred in 1952 when a Dutch forestry officer reported seeing a Bali tiger. There have been even sightings have even continued to surface in the 1970s. One suspected sighting was in a western reserve in 1970, and the Balinese forestry workers reported another in 1972. Despite these positive reports, it is almost certain that the Bali tiger is extinct and little chance it will ever be rediscovered. The remaining forest areas in Bali are simply no longer large enough to provide a tiger with the required shelter and food source. So that's the story of the Bali tiger. And you might want to know that the Bali tiger was the smallest subspecies of the tiger, Panthera tigris. Its weight did not exceed 100 kilograms. Its size was comparable with the size of a leopard, and was only about half the size of the Siberian tiger subspecies. The Bali tiger is, apart from its small size, very similar to the Javan subspecies, also extinct, with the dense pattern of stripes, but perhaps a shade darker. The Bally tiger had a short, dense fur that was of deep orange color and carried darker and fewer stripes than the other tiger subspecies. Call me at 206-984-3617 and let me know what you're thinking. Interesting. Smaller. They were smaller. So, the other subspecies of tigers, okay, include, let's see here. Let me see here. Recognized subspecies. There's the Sumatran tigers. There's the Javanese tiger. There's the Bally tiger. There's my yawn because I'm not getting enough oxygen in my brain. I was reading here about the tigers. Oh, here, relatives. Here we go. Unfortunately, since then, two further subspecies, the Caspian tiger and the Javan tiger, have become extinct. The six remaining tiger subspecies are the Bengal tiger, the Siberian tiger, the Sumatran tiger, the Indo-Chinese tiger, South China tiger, the Malayan tiger, and so forth. Apparently there's a new subspecies, which they're calling Peter Jackson or whatever, Panthera tigris jacksoni. But I was just thinking about the Chinese tigers. Okay, in the paper, during the Olympics, they're talking about China. There is a restaurant in China which is expensive to eat at, and it is meant for the rich people in China. And what they serve are penises, animal penises. But they have, like, extinct animals, you know. It's like tiger penis, you know, a plate of tiger penis. You know, because these crazy people believe that the penis, eating a penis is going to give you, like, power or something. I mean, even in China today, animal parts are being used in traditional medicine, you know, which is crazy, personally. You know, I'm not saying that all the Chinese are crazy, but, you know, most of them are, I would say. Eating penises. And they had a picture in the paper about the Chinese penis restaurant. And there's a plate full of penises. There's a dolphin penis, I think, was on there. No wonder the animals are being, you know, extinct. It's because crazy people think they can get power from penises, you know. The only penis you can get power from is your own. And even then, you don't get any power from your penis. You know, penis is just a penis, you know. A penis is a penis. Say it to me. Say it to yourself. A penis is just a penis. That's it. It's no more special than anything else. A vagina, for example. Which, you know, that's the only other thing, really. Just a vagina and a penis, because have two sexes. But anyway, that's all I wanted to talk about, is extinction. And I also wanted to make a little quick note, is that apparently the ivory-billed woodpecker is no longer extinct, though Yale University, they're the skeptical ones. They don't believe, pardon me, the ivory-billed woodpecker is extinct. I think Yale University is behind all of the problems in the world. So I think we ought to just blow up Yale University, because, you know, that's where George Bush went. When Johnny comes marching home again, hoorah, hoorah, we'll give him a hearty welcome then. Hoorah, hoorah, the men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies, they will all turn out, and we'll all feel gay when Johnny comes marching home. The old church bell will peal with joy, hurrah, hurrah. to welcome home our darling boy. Hurrah, hurrah, the village lads and the lassies say, with roses they will strew the way, and we'll all feel gay. When Johnny comes marching home. Before the rain. Good, it's recording. Okay, last night I saw a movie with some friends, Gail and Joy, called Before the Rains, and it's a new Merchant Ivory film set in India in the 1930s. And it features the story of a man whose last name is Moores, and he's building a road to expand his plantation for tea and spices. And he has a right-hand man who's an Indian called TK, I think, or TK. And he has a housekeeper named Surjani, a woman who is married in the village below to this man. Well, we find out that Moores is having an affair with Surjani, and their affair is discovered by two boys and in the village. And eventually, word gets out that Surjani's having an affair with this man. When her husband finds out, he beats her up. She escapes and moors to Moore's home. By this time, his wife and child have come to India to live with him. And so because it's this tribal affair, because at this time, you know, the law of the tribe was that if a woman was found to be an adulteress, they would hang her, you know, and kill her and do all sorts of shameful things to her body. And so she comes bloody to the house, and if they had it put the family at risk there, the English man and everybody involved, because if the tribe had found out that she was being protected, they could have killed everybody in the house. I mean, these crazy motherfuckers. So of course, from my Western, viewpoint, I know that there are crazy Christians and crazy Western people, but I think for the most part, we have a system of law, a sense of justice and law, which is fairer, I think, than some of these tribal things that go on. For example, the death of to kill the adulteress, right? I mean, that happens today in some Muslim countries because of the Muslim law, okay? Am I saying that Western law is better? Yeah, I am. You know, I'll say that right out. I do. I don't think that what the hell do they call that Muslim law? Hold on. Yeah, Sharia law. No, Sharia law is I think that personally, I think it's stupid and terrible. I don't think that's law at all. I mean, you might think of me as being, a Westerner with, thinks I'm better than everybody else. But I really can't, give too much credence to these ideas, these Sharia law, tribal law, because it's violent and it's not fair. There's no justice there. And there's no science. It's all based on belief. And it's just like what the religious right wants to, make America, based on belief and not science. And if anybody knows anything about American history, that our forefathers were rational men, okay, not irrational, and faith is an irrational response. Now, you might say, well, Kenty, you talk about believing in God. Yes, I do believe in God, but I also know that it's irrational, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm just saying it has nothing to do with looking for truth in a a way that is satisfactory for all people in our society, okay? Now, let me give you an example, and it would happen in the movie because it's a spoiler. So if anybody's interested in seeing it, you know, you might want to turn this off. But
call me at 206-984-3617 and let me know what you're thinking.
I was the only one who laughed at this point, by the way. So anyway, what happens is that TK is accused of killing Sir Johnny, because what happens is Sir Johnny kills herself. And there's this bloody body. They bury it in the river. This is the Englishman's idea. I mean, he's so stupid. And so they end up accusing the Indian guy, TK, because he had an English gun and they thought he shot her. So he said he didn't. You know, he's telling the tribal war chiefs, I didn't do it. Well, I don't believe him. So I forget what they called it. Let's submit him to the Kama Jama or something like that. It's Kama something. And so so they take him to the Kama Jama, right? And this is the room. And this is priest with wild painted face. And it's this flame, right? And so this is the Kama Jama. We're going to heat up this bronze spoon, you know, over the heat. It's in the fire, right? And the person has to lick the spoon 3 times without moving his head either right or left. And then he has to rinse his mouth out and then show his tongue. And if his tongue is not marred by the hot spoon, then he is telling the truth. Okay? This movie is very tense. It's sort of filmed like a horror movie or like an 80s horror movie in a way. At this point, I burst out laughing in the movie theater. It's the only one, because it was like, I can't believe it. Duh. Everybody is guilty under this stupid law. And I'm just thinking to myself, you know, I am open to a lot of different things, and I'm open to different cultures, and I like learning about different cultures. But let me tell you, a society based on that is, you know, stupid. You know, I mean, it's, you know, it really is. I mean, that is backwards. I mean, it's based on, that is a culture that's just based on emotions and based on superstition. And, you know, it's as bad as, I mean, I'm not saying Christians are better, okay? I'm talking about our culture is better. Our society is I think, much more broad. You know what I'm saying? And fair in many ways. And I think that's better because it includes more, you know? It's liberal, liberating. So at the same time, you know, I think to myself, well, those beliefs are becoming extinct. I mean, people who believe, okay, like in this movie, they believe that when they die, they become fireflies or something like that, or dragonflies. That's it. It made me think of Randy's story. When the Indians die, they become dragonflies. That's where their souls go, you know. But, you know, the more I encounter these notions, I mean, it's irrational, you know. And I guess if you're a listener of the show and you believe in those things, whatever, Mary. But, you know, America is not that place. If you're coming to America, you know, you're going to have to open up your mind. And as for Americans already living here, you're going to have to open up your mind too, because we're not going to shut down America because you have to have crutches on your brain to even cross the street because you're weak-minded, you know? America is for the brave and the strong and for the, you know, free. And the only way to be free is to have open eyes and look at reality as reality. And that's not to say you can't have private beliefs, because, you know, like I said, I have a private belief that God exists too. But I'm not going to use that as evidence, you know what I'm saying, for anything. Because you can't – that's unprovable. You have to be rational, right? 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 So anyway, go see the movie. It's really good. I wish I was in the land of cotton. Old times there are not forgotten. Look away, look away, look away, Dixieland. In Dixieland, where I was born in, early on, one frosty morning, look away, look away, look away, Dixieland. Then I wish I was in Dixie, hooray, hooray. In Dixieland, I'll take my stand to live and die in Dixie. Away, away, away down south in Dixie. Away, away, away down south in Dixie. 1937. Well, kids, the reason why I say 1937 is basically because the movie Before the Rains, which I talked about before, right before this, maybe, maybe not, depending on how I order these things, that was set in 1937. So I was interested in that year. And a lot happened in 1937. Just check it out on Wikipedia, wikipedia.com for all your information needs. So anyway, here are some highlights from 1937. Let's start with Germany. The Hindenburg blew up. Carmina Burana was performed. I mean, that was the year it was composed and performed. That's Karl Orff. Carmina Burana. Oh, Fortuna! Also, Friedrich Niemöller. Niemöller was an anti-Nazi theologian who wrote the poem First They Came, or wrote whatever, the thing about the first they came for so-and-so, then they came for that, then they came for me, but no one was left to say anything. He's part of the Confessing Church, and he opposed Nazification of the church. However, he apparently was a little anti-Semitic, as many people were at that time. As I talked about a couple weeks ago, G.K. Chesterton, pretty smart guy, was a little bit anti-Semitic, but apparently he wasn't, because, you know, the Wiener Institute said he wasn't. Friedrich Niemöller, anyway, what happened to him? The Nazis came and got him and imprisoned him. He actually survived the war and lived to a ripe old age. I think he died in 1980 sometime. That year, also, Amelia Earhart got lost in her trip around the world. George Gershwin died. The last Valley Tiger died. See, you're getting all my information for the show. Snow White was on the screen, and Of Mice and Men was published. Mae West was also banned from radio that year. So, and the Marijuana Tax Act came into existence. The Marijuana Tax Act did not criminalize the growth of marijuana, growing marijuana, but made it economically unfeasible. That was until the 1940s, when it was hemp for victory, and America wanted farmers to grow marijuana because they needed that resource because of the Japanese. Apparently, we got the hemp from the Japanese before. I don't know how that worked. But anyway, it was suddenly hemp for victory. And of course, it wasn't until the 1970s or late 60s that hemp became a controlled substance and it was illegal to grow it. I think you can grow it if you're a scientist and you have the proper things. But I think it's really stupid. I think it's a stupid law. I don't smoke marijuana, but I know marijuana, the hemp plant, is a profitable, is a useful crop. So, you know, what's the point? And, you know, call me at 206-984-3617 and let me know what you're thinking. And all the potheads I knew, I mean, they're potheads, but they're pretty fun people. You know, they usually don't smoke and drive, and I'm not really sure what kind of kind of effect it has on people's driving skills, but whatever, you know, people smoke tobacco, you know, and that's worse, you know. I mean, I saw the other day this man, he's a young man, he is in this car, his children are in the back seat in safety seats, buckled in, the windows are rolled up, and he's puffing away on a cigarette inside the car. He rolls down the window an inch and throws the littered cigarette out onto the ground and rolls it back up. So the kids, I guess, can get the most secondhand smoke they possibly can. And, of course, I got some secondhand smoke because I had, you know, it was smoldering on the ground and I was sitting there waiting for Johnny. You know, I should have gotten out and stamped on it. But, yeah, you know, where are our values? You know, who cares about marijuana? I mean, there must be a reason, right? But it's probably not a very good reason. So anyway, a lot happened in 1937. It was a very important year. Also, Roosevelt wanted to enlarge the Supreme Court. Now, what do you think about that idea? Do you think it would be a good idea to have more judges on the Supreme Court or less? What do you think? Not less, but I mean the same amount. Like, what do you think? Do you think that would have been a good idea? I mean, it didn't pass. The New Deal passed, but that part didn't. But I was thinking, you know, maybe that'd be a good thing to have more judges, you know, more, you know, I don't know. Maybe that's a bad idea. What do you think? No, I think more judges would be better because there's a, you know, people, their lifetime appointment, and I think that'd be good because people can change, you know, and they can see, and so I think that's a good thing. So yeah, more judges, more Supreme Court judges. I'm looking at an apple in a tree across the street, actually several apples, but I just saw one when I mentioned it. So also, what do you think about Hillary Clinton as being a Supreme Court justice? Do you think that would ever? Do you think that would be, it's possible that Hillary Clinton could be appointed a Supreme Court justice? Do you think she'd take it? And what would that mean? You know, it was interesting. Somebody had mentioned that to me the other day. Also in 19, there's that mouth noise. Also in 1913, Daffy Duck debuted in Porky's Duck Hunt. Oh, and the IRA attempted to kill King George VI.
Another 5-minute mystery.
Shouldn't be walking against the light with traffic so heavy.
Sorry, officer, I
didn't
see it.
Holy smoke, what was that?
Officer, a woman's falling out of that window.
Good heavens, she'll be killed.
Okay, back up here and let me through. Hey, Clancy, better call an ambulance. I'm going up to that hotel window to do a little investigating. You say your wife, Rita, jumped from this window, Graham.
That's right, officer. Miss Carlton here and I tried to stop her, but we weren't able.
Rita and I were old friends, officer.
My wife had been in ill health for some time. She had a nervous breakdown, and it seemed to make her afraid of everything. She feared elevators, high buildings, everything. I invited Miss Carlton for dinner this evening. Thought that perhaps she could cheer Rita up a little and help bring her back to normalcy.
But she'd changed so much.
How's that?
Well, instead of being cheered, she imagined that I was coming between her and Mr. Graham. Even accused me of it directly.
Then tonight, with a startling suddenness, she stood up angrily and pushed over the coffee table, saying she knew we thought her crazy. Then she ran to that window, climbed up on the sill and jumped.
This window's pretty small. And these newly made scratches on the windowsill, they're hunks of wood torn out by your wife's fingernails. Here on the outer edge of the sill.
She must have made a grasp for the sill after she jumped. Miss Carlton and I both finally attempted to grab her, but We got to the window just as she fell forward, head first off the ledge.
Head first, eh?
That's right, officer. She climbed up here on the sill. Then just as Miss Carlton and I made a grab for her, she leaned forward and fell.
Oh, it was terrible. If only Graham and I had gotten there a fraction of a second sooner. Maybe if I hadn't been here, this wouldn't have happened.
Very true, Miss Carlton, and perhaps neither would I have to perform my little duty.
Your duty, officer?
Meaning, Miss Carlton, I arrest you and Mr. Graham for the murder of Rita Graham.
In just a moment, we'll see whether you, too, detected the flaw in Graham's and Miss Carlton's stories. But first... Solution of our story.
Mr. Graham, you said your wife was afraid of everything, yet she didn't fear leaping from a 15th floor window. However, that isn't the biggest mistake you two made. Surely when you were struggling to push Ms. Graham out of the window, you should have noticed where, in her futile efforts to stop you, her fingernails had torn out pieces from the outer edge of the sill. No person having jumped headfirst out of a 15th floor window would have time or the ability to turn in midair and frantically grasp the sill. Your alibi missed the mark that time.
The Stranger by Walter de la Mare. Half hidden in a graveyard in the blackness of a yew, where never living creature stirs nor sunbeam pierces through, is a tomb green and crooked, its faded legend gone, with but one rain-worn cherub's head of moldering stone. There, when the dusk is falling, silence broods so deep, it seems that every wind that breathes blows from the field of sleep. Day breaks in heedless beauty, kindling each drop of dew, but unforsaking shadow dwells beneath this lonely yew. And all else lost and faded, only this listening head keeps with a strange, unanswering smile its secret with the dead.
You've been listening to The Flatus Show. You can reach me at flatusshow@gmail.com or come by and visit my website at theflatusshow.com. Thank you for listening.
shoe.